From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made on the final Friday of this month at around 5:30 that night, Halloween. It's a night of great fun for many families, and especially for kids. It's also a night that some parents dread, particularly if you're a parent who has tried to instill good eating habits. And we're not talking about forcing broccoli down the throats of unwilling children. We're talking about teaching kids that real food should be celebrated, looked forward to, that agriculture is the lifeblood of our communities. We watch our kids become candy-seeking missiles on Halloween, and yes, most people say it's just one night. But is it? How many children's books, how many children's shows feature candies or cookies or cakes? How many instead feature a celebration of real agriculture? I don't see many children's books that love butternut squash risotto. So we start to see that big candy, big sugar is a near constant presence. And then we're going to talk about options for families that also want something a little different on the lighter side for kids, apart from the food aspects. Options you might not know about in our area. So let's welcome our panel for this hour. And they're looking at me saying, don't drag me into your buzzkill mentality. But no, I think this is going to be a productive discussion. Chris LeBeau is here. Christina LeBeau is a former DNC reporter, now the author of the wonderful Spoon-Fed blog about kids and healthy eating. Chris, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And I really do dig it. I love what you're doing.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Heather Fiore is here, registered dietitian at URMC, among many other things. I hope that's probably the best description for you.
That'll work for today.
Yeah, that'll work for this particular panel. Deb Ross is the creator of KidsOutAndAbout.com. Deb, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Evan.
And George Walker's here of Holiday Hollow out in Pembroke, which has been doing the Holiday Hollow for about 15 years. How many?
22 years.
22
this year.
Years.
Yeah.
My goodness. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk about that as an alternative form of entertainment as well. So, but here we are, and somebody stop me before I get too grumpy or cantankerous, but I'll go around the room. Chris, am I off base here as a parent? I mean, I do have a 2.5-year-old who's a very good eater, but he likes sugary substances too. He's 2.5. Mm-hmm. And I'm dreading the end of this month. It's the first holiday for Halloween that he's fully cognizant of what it is all about.
Right.
And I kind of dread the notion that you get to go to every house in the block and load up on packaged food. I don't think he's had a single packaged candy in his life. And he's about to be inundated with it.
Well, is he? How old is he?
2.5.
Do you have to take him trick-or-treating?
No, I actually think we probably won't.
Okay. I was going to say, we didn't take our daughter trick-or-treating, I don't think, to more than a couple neighbors until she was probably 3 or 4. And so that's the first thing, is that I think, you know, it's really up to the parents when they start introducing those kinds of things to children, because the earlier those kinds of foods are introduced to kids, the more the kids develop a taste for them. I mean, kids aren't born, you know, with a craving for sugar. They're not. And they're certainly not born with a craving for the kinds of candy that typically is given out at Halloween. Those are acquired tastes. So that's the first thing, is it's really up to you. It's up to parents to decide when to begin. But, you know, as far as older children, because once, you know, kids start getting older and they get into school, especially,
school, yeah.
You know, Halloween is Halloween. I mean, we all loved Halloween as children. There's nothing wrong with Halloween. I think where we go wrong is when we say it's just one night, because while Halloween is just one night, that's absolutely true. There's only one Halloween. We unfortunately now live in a food culture where junk and special treats, and you can't see me, but I'm putting air quotes mm-hmm. around special treats, because everything now is a special treat. Everything now is an occasion for celebration. You go to a sports practice, and out come the Gatorade and the Cheetos. You go to school, and out come the colored frosted cupcakes for birthdays once a week. Food, candy rewards, pizza parties. You know, there's all kinds of stuff now inundating our children, and we didn't have that when we were kids. And so food culture has changed. Food is thrown at children a lot more than it used to be. And food itself has changed, of course. It's much more highly processed. It's filled with many more additives than we used to have. And not just, you know, cookies, cakes. It's all kinds of foods, everyday foods. So in my view, Halloween can be celebrated. Children can enjoy candy. But I think we need to look at it in context. We need to put it in perspective. And say, yeah, it's one night, but unfortunately, it's one night in a pretty much endless stream of junk being thrown at our kids. And there's nothing wrong with limiting the candy. There's nothing wrong with putting some parameters around that. We're parents. We have the right to do that in every aspect of our children's lives. And candy should not be seen any differently, in my mind.
Let me ask Heather the same kind of question. Are there concerns about the impact on a child's eating habits when it's not, again, it's one night of candy and they eat however much you sort of let them, but it's also this mentality that this is the greatest night of the year because I get to go out and do this, as opposed to I can't wait to be involved in helping make dinner with my family. I can't wait to, you know, eat sort of real food. It's packaged candy.
Right. I don't know that there's really a way to, I don't know, quell the excitement of junk candy. Mm-hmm. Like, I think kids are just, you can't control the kids' environment beyond, you know, the toddler years to protect them from the culture of our, you know, our overall culture of, you know, candy.
You mean you
stuff.
Can't get away from it entirely?
You can't get away from it. So they're going to, at some point very soon, you know, be really excited about candy. Now, what you do in your own home is, you know, is up to you, of course, and you can, you know, serve candy once in a while and not make it a big deal and try to make it, you know, not a daily thing, but just like, sure, you can have a piece of candy here and there and try to, you know, try to make it not a big deal so that it doesn't become this, like, you know, they're like feverish. They're so excited for candy because they never get it, or because for whatever reason they're just, you know, I don't know. Our culture just creates this excitement of like candy, like it's, you know, the best thing ever.
Yeah.
So if you just try to treat it like, sure, you know, no big deal, have a piece of candy here and there, and, you know, maybe that'll help. But you also want to have, you know, the big picture in your family of, you know, healthy eating habits, and if, you know, candy is in the context of a healthy diet, then, you know, it's not going to be nearly as harmful as, you know, a family where you don't have that base. And a lot of families don't start there with a healthy base.
Well, before I even ask Deb and George on this question, let me play for you the comments of a wise American philosopher on the very subject of the way kids behave when it comes to Halloween.
Candy was my whole life when I was a kid. That was first 10 years of my life. I think the only clear thought I had was get candy. That was it. Family, friends, school, they're just obstacles in the way of the candy. I'm out for the candy here. I'm just thinking, get candy, get candy, get candy, get candy, get candy. So the first time you hear the concept of Halloween when you're a kid, your brain can't even process the information. You're like, What is this? What did you say? So what did you say about giving out candy? Who was giving out candy? Everyone that we know is just giving out candy? Are you kidding me? When is this happening? Where? Why? Take me with you. I gotta be a part of this. I'll do anything that they want. I can wear that.
That is Jerry Seinfeld on Halloween. Deb Ross, you're a mom.
I am a mom. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s before it was trendy to send your kids in to school with whole wheat bread or anything that was good for you.
Is it trendy to do that? I'd be
now,
glad to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I was the kid in my class who was not allowed to have anything that had preservatives in it, anything that had artificial sweeteners or artificial colors or anything. It's much more common these days for kids to be in families where they have a sort of a more healthy attitude toward that. Lots of kids bring whole wheat bread to school and they're not made fun of. But now of course my father was hyper focused on this. It was the prevention era. It was an era of, you know, sort of the end of the hippie era.
You were ridiculed for it?
Oh my gosh. I can't even tell you. And what it did, this hyper focus, without talking about celebrating all different kinds of foods. We didn't make food at home. We just had to eat the stuff that we had to take 8 vitamins a day. It was a kind of crazy time. And what I decided when I grew up was, wait a minute. What is the goal of parenting? It's to raise future adults who are healthy and happy and productive and non-neurotic. And it took me until my mid-20s to become non-focused on sugar and sweet stuff, because that was the goal, to try to subvert all this craziness that I was raised with. I know Chris is doing this in a different way with her daughter. She has a much more sort of holistic, let's celebrate life kind of attitude. But that was not how I grew up.
Yours was more about denial.
It was all about denial.
And so you can push it too far.
Oh, yes, you
deny
can.
Deny it too much, and then all of a sudden you create this, you know, this thirst for it.
Yeah, my relatives used to beckon us to secret cupboards and feed us candy whenever we would go to the relative's house.
I'm sure your parents would be really thrilled to hear that.
Oh, they knew. My mother knew. It was a secret.
Okay.
It was just to keep it from my dad. So this was a crazy hyper focus on this, which is what we don't want as parents, right? We need balance. We need, let's teach our kids why we do things to be healthy and what the actual reason. Like, I wanted to grow up not neurotic, but it took me a while to get there. Seriously.
And I understand. Did you want to jump in on that, Chris?
If you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Were you done, Deb?
Yeah, I'm done. Well,
For the moment. I just wanted to comment on the issue of the difference between teaching children. How do I put this? Well, let me tell a story. So here's the thing. The way we handle Halloween, my daughter is now 10. She's almost 11. The way that we handle Halloween, when she was very young, you know, first started trick-or-treating, four or five years old, whatever, I would go through her candy and I would sort it out and pick out anything that was contained the most egregious ingredients in my mind. Food dyes, number one, chemical preservatives, artificial sweeteners, you know, just things that I really did not want her eating. And she's mostly a chocolate girl anyway, so it all worked out pretty well. So as she got older, I started involving her in that process. We'd go through the candy, we pick out the stuff that, you know, is the best of the worst. And, you know, she can eat it as she wants to, and she tends to not have a very highly developed sweet tooth anyway, because she's been brought up eating more wholesome sweets and, you know, things like dark chocolate, things that are homemade at baked goods that are homemade with maple syrup and honey as sweeteners instead of cane sugar. So she's developed a taste for things that are not super ultra sweet. So, you know, she tends to be okay with that. But she's always been involved in the process of sorting out the candy. You know, in the beginning, we would throw away candy that she didn't want. Then we started using it for gingerbread houses. That's what we do now. We save all of this colorful junk, and we turn it into fantastic gingerbread decorations. We do candy experiments with it. We do all kinds of fun things. Okay, so that's how we handle Halloween. I was having a conversation with a friend about her son. She asked me before Halloween one year how we handle all of the candy, and I told her what I just told you, and she looked at me and she said, well, I wish my son would act like this, would do that, but he gets it in front of him and he eats it all and he is unstoppable. Now, the backstory on this person is that she severely limits the sugar in her family, severely, like the kids get no sugar. And I said, well, you might want to look at that, because, you know, when you limit it and you make it completely forbidden, of course, a child is going to want to know what they're missing. But it's always been our philosophy that our daughter can taste whatever she wants, because there is, in our mind, no surer way to get her to appreciate real food than to taste the alternative. So when she's tasting a good piece of chocolate versus a piece of, you know, drugstore junky chocolate, the taste difference is substantial, and she appreciates that. And so I'm all about teaching kids to be food literate, to understand everything that we're trying to instill in them, not just telling them they need to eat better, not just giving them good food, but educating them all along the way about why we're doing that, because that's how they're going to make the decisions on their own when we're not around anymore.
I see. What's so interesting about that, and Chris is the author of the SpoonFed blog, you can find online at
SpoonFedBlog.net.
Yeah, what's so interesting about that is when we talk about candy versus real food, I often think of real food in terms of the agricultural sense, mm-hmm. the beautiful harvest colors and
which it is.
But you're talking about real food in the sweet side.
Exactly.
Real food sweets can be great.
Yeah, because I am not personally a fan, and I also think there's good research behind this as well, of banning foods by category, let's say. Okay, you never eat sweets, you never eat fats, you never, whatever. We don't believe in that, and it doesn't work. We're all about ingredients. So I have no problem with pizza, okay? I have no problem with a cookie. I have no problem with macaroni and cheese. But to me, it's all about how it's made, what the ingredients are. So that's an important thing that I think people need to think about.
Is that what you do? You hand out anything on Halloween?
We do. Yeah, we do. What do we hand out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Up until, well, the last couple of years, we've lived downtown, so we haven't had trick-or-treaters. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, we handed out little Play-Doh tubs. We handed out little notepads. You know, we handed out non-food items. And I tried to get useful non-food items, not just junk that is contributing to a different kind of waste, right? And one year we handed out the Yummy Earth lollipops, which are these sort of junk-free lollipops, you know, no dyes, no artificial sweeteners, and, you know, no high fructose corn syrup. And my thinking was, at least, you know, we're kind of tipping the balance in the treat bags there. You know, we're giving something. There are some good alternatives if you do want to hand out candy. There's the Yummy Earth lollipops. You know, the co-ops and Wegmans and whatnot now offer, you know, dark chocolate little mini bars. I mean, there are options out there, but you don't have to hand out candy. We found that the kids were ecstatic to get Play-Doh, even the older kids. Mm-hmm. They thought that was the best thing ever. There's a great website called Green Halloween that lists endless, you know, numbers of things you can give out if you don't want to give out candy.
I don't know. America's going to spend $9 billion on Halloween, according to FastCompany.com. Average person spending about $21 just on candy this year for one night. Anyway, so I don't know. I think you may be breaking a law, apparently.
By not giving out candy?
Yeah, I don't know.
I probably spend that. I'm the Play-Doh. Who knows? Right. But I'm telling you.
But it doesn't have to be the big candy.
The reception, yeah. No, the reception is great. We get kids excited, even little notepads and people, you know.
And I'm somewhat fixated on the food side of this, but I wanted George Walker in here as well because George has, if you go out to Pembroke at Holiday Hollow, it doesn't just have to be on the food side of things. If you have questions about Halloween does have to be this or doesn't have to be this, it doesn't have to be the things that always scare kids. And George's family, well, first of all, let me ask you, because you've got kids and grandkids.
Yes.
You've been trick-or-treating for many years.
Oh, yes. Deb talked about being raised in the 70s. Ah, to have been raised in the 70s. I was raised in the 50s, which actually was a pretty good time. For example, and the phrase goes to a comedian I can't credit, but, you know, Mom had two items on the menu, take it or leave it.
Yes.
But unfortunately, part of what we had to take was, at that point, was canned spinach. I didn't know I liked spinach till I was an adult because I thought canned spinach was nauseating and so on.
Well, it probably is now.
Yeah, well, it was to me then, probably would be now, but I don't do canned spinach. But so our trick-or-treating was, as many things were in the 50s, much less magnified than everything is today. Like, you know, but so now, though, I get the fun of watching as a grandfather. And we had to pick up our grandson from school the other day. And I said, would you like an after-school snack? And he said, yes, I'm very hungry. I said, what would you like? He said, would you have an apple and some peanut butter? And I was going, yes, fist
pump.
There you go. Fist pump, you know, yes, that's great. I had to take him to school one morning when his mom went to work early. And I asked him, they asked him, you know, because he was a little late, okay, you need to put in your lunch order. What will you have, the hamburger, the pizza, or the salad? He said, I'll take the salad. And again, the fist pump from Grandpa, you know, I think this is great. Somehow that's in the culture, apparently, in that family, that was at least offered as an option, and he loved the options. Same thing watching them at Halloween, because we go to their house and they come back with their enormous bags of trick-or-treat. What is interesting to me is that with three siblings, it's a treasure hunt. It's about who got the most. And then there's a looking at the piles on the floor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you like the best? Peanut butter cups. Okay, peanut butter cup you get, you know. And a lot of that candy gets and ends up getting thrown away because it was a treasure hunt. It wasn't about some sticky, yucky stuff that they didn't really want anyway.
But it sounds like the kids in your family are happy to choose good options as opposed to they're eating a salad because they're told you have to.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think there's a big difference.
Absolutely. There's, from my observation at least, there's no pushing or you know, overt manipulation or anything. They're just seeing those choices. And I thought it was fortuitous that, you know, my grandson, for example, liked those options. And so there it was.
Well, I think that's very cool. By the way, George, if you go out to Holiday Hollow in Pembroke, you also do things differently on the non-food side. And by that we mean family entertainment that adults will kind of get, but kids enough to be scared of?
Yes, we're the family-friendly, happy, non-scary, non-gory, and we know we're not the only one, but Halloween alternative. And I think unique in a couple of senses. One is that, yes, there are costumes and there are characters and so on, but nobody's gory, nobody's scary, nobody gets chased around with a chainsaw. And as a matter of fact, my wife and I were kind of, being from the 50s, waxing nostalgic about what Halloween used to be, which was about little kids dressing dressing up in costumes and having fun. And now it's turned into something that it seems to be a lot more about gore and violence and that kind of thing. So this is a place where they can come. It's sort of like a mini Renaissance fair in an outdoor setting. So you're out and about, as in kids out and about.
Yes.
and it's a place to exercise not only your body but also your imagination. We do 7 live stage shows with a Halloween and pirate theme, all comedy. Yes, we do a lot of puns and a few throwaway one-liners that keep the adults entertained. Not really. The kids, what was that? I didn't get that, but it doesn't matter because the pirate's pants just dropped. So, or what I often say, we're always going to have the obligatory underpants jokes, but at the same time, we're going to try to keep the adults and the older kids entertained as well. And there are people who have come back, you know, starting as little kids, and now they're 13, and they're saying, I just got that joke.
Right.
Because we do repeat our shows, you know, some of them from year to year, but just a lot of fun in an outdoor setting. Yes, we do give a dum-dum pop for the reward for counting the number of teacups that the Mad Hatter, so we may need to rethink that as a reward.
Oh, no.
See if we can come up with another one. But dum-dum pops are like microscopic. But anyway.
It's not candy-focused is the point, right?
Not at
this
all.
Is happy Halloween pirate-focused.
Not food-focused,
not
really.
At all.
We have a refreshment stand and we have limitations on what we can serve there, but always open. And also, folks can bring their own food, and some folks do that, you know, because of what they want. We're sensitive to peanut allergies and that kind of thing too, so people are always welcome to do that. But it's about having a lot of fun as a family. The whole family can enjoy it and run around our little village that we have. We call it a shire. We say it's America's only Halloween shire because, as far as we know from a pretty thorough internet search, it is. It's the only place where you can go and find a little village with 7 shows that will entertain you and keep you outdoors and moving around and having fun.
Well, see, now we're seeing that's why George is here, because it's not about a buzzkill. It's about good alternatives this hour. There you go. Let's grab Keith in Farmington. Keith, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
How's everyone today?
Great.
I'm driving here. I'm shaking my head. The show should be subtitled, Helicopter Parents, How Am I Going to Survive Halloween? You know, it's only one day out of the whole year. And if you're worried about your kids getting, especially little kids, like Evan has a 2.5-year-old son.
Yep.
When he's not looking, and you tell him, you carry your candy. Oh, he'll be excited until it starts to get too heavy, and then you have to go back. But you can put an apple in there. You can put a big candy bar for yourself. But you just, I mean, my grandkids go trick-or-treating, and their candy literally lasts from past Christmas because they just don't scarf it down. This just seems a worry that doesn't have any rationale behind it. Now, I'm sure there's going to be a parent out there who doesn't really care about what their kid eats and will scarf the whole bag of candy down in a week or something. But
I promise you there's more than one. American kids are heavier than ever.
But you worry about Friday night. Trust me, from experience, him going trick-or-treating on a Halloween, he'll have more opportune time do wrong stuff on Friday nights and go trick or treat. just the nature of the way things go. And eating healthy, my grandkids love broccoli. They'll eat broccoli ad nauseum, but it needs caveat. Butter running down their arms, or they'll eat anything with ranch dressing in it.
Keith, thank you for the call. The one thing I'm gonna vehemently disagree on is I am the last, and I'm not here to judge parenting styles. That is not my job, and this isn't about me or my kid. But I'm not a helicopter parent at all.
Right.
That's not who I am. And Chris, when you heard the helicopter parent comment, you kind of shook your head a little bit. Is this about helicopter parenting?
No, I don't think it is. And I don't know. That's sort of in vogue now to use the term helicopter parenting to basically describe any, well, parenting, frankly. That's what we hear a lot of these days. If you are worried about your child in any way, people tend to turn to that term. So, the thing is, as we discussed earlier, Halloween, definitely one night, no question. Nobody doubts that Halloween is one night a year. Okay, but you know, it is, as we already discussed, there are not, there's this kind of celebratory atmosphere surrounding everything, even everyday events now. And let's also remember that Halloween trick-or-treating one might be one night a year, but in this day and age, you've got parties leading up to Halloween. You have kids who are in school having a Halloween party, maybe a friend's throwing a Halloween party. You're going to events, to you know, farms, to wherever you're going. There's a lot of stuff being offered this time of year. So, and that's just this time of year. I have a colleague who calls this the beginning of the candy high holidays, because we start with Halloween, and think about it. We go from Halloween right into the winter holidays, into Valentine's Day, into Easter. I mean, basically, the candy doesn't stop. If you look only at the holidays, the candy doesn't stop for 6 months plus. But then when you start adding in all of the other things we talked about, the school, the sports, the play dates, the bank teller, the, you know,
birthday parties,
endless birthday parties, both in school and out. I mean, that's the thing now these days. You know, when I was in school, we didn't have kids bringing in cupcakes once, twice a week for birthday parties, in addition to going to your birthday party on the weekend. You know, I mean, it just is endless. So, you know, I think we're parenting in a different age. I don't know. I think the gentleman said he had grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So I think today it's different. I think it's a lot different than it was when we were kids, and it's just something that we have to be aware of. So I don't see it any differently.
Let me ask Heather, our registered dietitian in the room there, about. Let me read a few stats first, and then I'm going to ask Heather a question on this. According to Ad Age Online, big candy, and that big sugar and big candy are actually separate lobbies, and they refer to each other that way. It's actually seriously true. You can actually track how much money they give members of Congress, et cetera, et cetera. And big candy supported an effort to put on the front of the label calorie labels on the front, with one caveat: it had to be in green, because they actually did a study, and people think if it says calories on the front, but if it's in green, it means it's sort of a green light, it's okay. And so big candy said, yeah, calorie labels on the front, as long as it's in green. And they have, and now you've got Congress helping sort of artificially keep the price of sugar high through all kinds of different things, a loan guarantee program, things like that. $862 million to farmers in recent years, according to Ad Age, that tracked this stuff. And do we have kids heavier than ever, Heather? Is that true?
It is true.
Is it related to this?
Related to Halloween?
Well, I don't. Not one day, but more of a wider culture.
It's certainly related to our culture of, just sort of overeating, or eating for every occasion. You know, like Chris is describing. I mean, there's food everywhere you look, and it's not a lot more processed and a lot less, real homemade food, and not driven by hunger. And you know, we just are not teaching our kids to have a good relationship with food. Like, we don't have, kids don't understand where their food comes from. When to eat, when to not eat. You know, we've lost all sense of, you know, when, you know, eating healthy and eating in context. You know, the caller was describing, you know, certain, you know, parenting style, but he's failing to look at the context of this parenting. We're in a crisis of childhood obesity, as you're describing, and we need to do something. And yes, maybe Halloween, you know, October 31st is not the problem, but it's a problem around, you know, the whole year round, with people, not instilling a healthy relationship with food.
I know several people want to jump in here. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Deb.
Well, you know, one of the things that helicopter parenting is kind of, I can see that that's been on the rise a little bit in the terms of parents not helping their kids learn to be as independent as we were taught to be, right? So I think that's really what the culture refers to when it's talking about helicopter parenting.
I agree.
And so, in fact, I think that, in a way, one of the aspects of that has contributed to the childhood obesity scandal, mm-hmm. which is that kids don't just go outside anymore, because parents parents are afraid to send their kids outside. And we have a lot of now sort of a hyper parent culture where we're sending kids back inside, right? Kids who go down the block to the park are being sent home because they don't have a parent with them.
You send them outside with an iPod or an iPad or a smartphone.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so there's all of these things have kind of contributed to it. If you look at the goal of being a good parent, it is to raise an independent person. And so gradually, I'm perfectly confident that your son is going to be fine because you are giving him all the information that he's going to need to make those good choices for himself. And you're going to show him how to do that hand in hand and then gradually letting go.
Well, and I want him to fall. If he falls, he's going to learn what caused him to fall. I don't want to catch him every time that happens. The other day, this is going to shock everyone at this table, we were at Powers Farm Market, and he was eating a cookie outside, and a chunk of it dropped on the ground, and he looked down, and he picked it up, and he put it in his mouth. And I thought, well, a little dirt will probably make him a little more immune to whatever is out there in the atmosphere.
I think you're
so
right.
So I don't
absolutely
necessarily
right.
know that I'm a helicopter parent, but I also don't want to disparage parenting styles. I think everybody's different. You were nodding when she mentioned the fact that when kids don't go outside, or when we sort of it's different, I think, probably, than when you grew up.
Well, yes. Fortunately for me, unfortunately for the times, I think. I was raised in Buffalo, and it was make sure you're home before the streetlights go out.
Right.
And I could get on my bike and ride down to where the police horses were for the mounted police, give them a sugar cube, and then ride over.
At what age?
Oh, I was about 11 years old.
I mean, today parents could be viewed as sort of negligent.
Never do that. And I have to say, I was vice president for student services at Genesee Community College for many years, and so I understand the concern about helicopter parenting, but it's different perhaps than what the caller was thinking of, because it was more a parent coming in and saying, well, I'm really concerned about my child's grades.
Yes.
And I'd say, well, is your child concerned about their grades? Because part of what, as an educator, I didn't teach classes, but I felt my role was to say, behavior has consequences. Is your child studying? Because they'd say, well, what can we do about my child's grades? And I'd say, well, we could encourage your child to turn in assignments on time, not miss class, et cetera, et cetera. So in that sense, I understand concern about helicopter, air quotes, parenting. On the other hand, I look back to my era of the 50s and wonder if it was helicopter parenting to say, the answer's no, because I'm your father and I said so. End of conversation. And it was, but the point was then, as an individual, I had to say, okay, the answer's no, and I can't disagree with what my dad said. So how am I going to proceed as an individual, an independent individual, based on those guidelines at this point?
And Chris, I know you've been wanting to jump in as well. Go ahead.
I just wanted to add a bit to what Heather had said about the obesity statistics. One thing that I think it's important to recognize is that the food culture we have is not just a problem for children who are overweight. That tends to be something that people think, well, if my child is not fat, my child has no problem. And that's not true. There's a rise, and I don't have the statistics in front of me. Maybe Heather knows, but there's sort of an overall category of illness called metabolic syndrome, which can manifest in all kinds of ways. And looking at a person, you would never know that there is something going on inside of them that is effectively affecting their body in the same way that being obese would affect their bodies. And weight is only part of the problem. Skinny children can still be affected by the inferior quality of the food that we're talking about. And not only that, but things like artificial food dyes have been linked definitively at this point to hyperactivity, to behavioral disorders, to other health issues in children. They actually now require warning labels in other countries. There was a push to try to get food dyes labeled here in the U.S. It did not go through, but there's ever-increasing momentum on that front. Corporations are listening to parents and listening to the research and voluntarily taking food dyes out of some of their foods. So I just think it's important to note that the crisis we have is not only the obesity crisis. It's really an overall health issue.
Can you jump in on some of the points there when it comes to the quality of nutrition, not just on the obesity side, Heather?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that kids, all kids need to learn, healthy eating, you know, balanced nutrition. Again, the, having a good relationship with food is going to set them up to be healthy throughout their lives. And yeah, just because you're you know, so-called healthy weight doesn't mean that you're a healthy person. So, or that you're not a healthy weight, that you're not a healthy person. It's about, you know, being fit and taking care of your body. And I think, you know, we're missing that message with kids, that, you know, we want to teach kids how to take care of their bodies.
Let me grab a call. This is Francis in Penfield. Go ahead, Francis.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a couple points because sugar is one of my hot topics. But one is that I remember when I volunteered in the schools in the early 90s, my children had options to get gummy worms and the cafeteria line going down the line. And I just was appalled to think that our tax dollars are paying for raw sugar, you know, as the kids for an option to get. And I thought, what about at least ice cream, oatmeal cookies, gummy worms? My kids had never had them, and they get them at school. So that was one thing, and that doesn't happen anymore, and I think it's because parents said things. Another one was when the kids were young in the early 90s. It got to the point where we were not allowed to bring in homemade goods because of the allergies there. So the only snacks you could bring in were store-bought, which, of course, have all the preservatives and everything in it. We used to bring in banana muffins with cream cheese topping, like strawberry cream cheese for the frosting. And the kids thought that was great, but then it got to where, sorry, we're worried about allergies and germs and all that and what's going on in your kitchen. So it has to be store-bought, which terrifically restricted what you could bring in.
Well, Francis, you make the point about allergies, but how about this fact? I don't think I have ever seen a single story of a child poisoned to death from a malicious food giver outer on Halloween. We scare kids and families into thinking that everybody around the corner could be lurking to try to go after your kid, which is a terrible disservice to your neighbors, by the way, to think of them in that way. But Francis, your point about allergies, it's now to the point where Chris is talking about good sugar, real food, real sweets. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we'll just bake real cookies and we'll put them in little bags and hand them out. But the second you do that, they're not in a
right.
Mars package.
Right.
People are going
right.
to view them suspiciously right. instead of yep. saying, hey, thanks for doing that, aren't they?
Right.
Exactly. So you, but then you go back to where you have Halloween parties for the kids, and then you know they have different rituals for their Halloween, although it's hard to take away Halloween. And I had one more point.
Yep.
And that is sugar is a poison, and it's addictive. And if anyone kind of doubts that, I would just look at alcohol, because that's really an adult's sugar tooth is alcohol, because alcohol is basically pure sugar, and it's everyone knows it's addictive, and it's a poison. I know that when I was a young child, and even as an adult, when I get too much sugar in my system, I literally get sick. All of a sudden, my defenses are down, and I'm vulnerable to anything. We're poisoning our children with this stuff, and it's so in the culture that we forget that. I mean, I think back in the 40s and 50s, it was after the war, and we needed to fatten everyone up, so we all ate beef and butter and sugar because we all had come off a war, and the war's over, and we all kind of, we need to get the pendulum back in the other direction
well,
to remember what real food is.
Francis, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. On Twitter, Kathleen says, kudos to Evan for having a registered dietitian on the show about healthy eating. Doesn't happen as much as you'd think. So let me ask the registered dietitian, sugar addictive?
There's probably a subset of people that have a similar reaction or, you know, addictions type of reaction. And I think there's emerging research on that. I wouldn't say definitively yes or no. I'd say there's possibly, you know, a subset of people that have a reaction like that to sugar. But it can't be that bad, because look at how much sugar everyone's eating and, you know, nobody's, I don't know, going through withdrawals if they don't eat it or, you know, I don't think...
It's not the same kind of addiction as alcohol addiction.
It's certainly not not like that. But yes, it's possible that some people do maybe have some kind of reaction to it. But it's hard to tease out. As Chris is pointing out, there's all this other stuff along with the sugar, and maybe that's the reaction people are having.
Chris, could you give out home-baked cookies and bags on Halloween, or do you think it would be socially unacceptable?
I could if I wanted to do the work. but yeah, no, I could. And... To the point about schools, I just want to mention, the caller was correct that more schools these days are going to packaged only baked goods or packaged only anything. It's not all schools. There are still schools out there, including our own, that allow home baked goods. And
can you give us an example? What district you're talking about?
We're homeschooling, but we were in a private school.
Okay.
So I don't know district by. I think
none
even
of the
within
public schools do actually because the public health department says no for reasons of hepatitis, not food allergies.
Okay.
Actually, every district, because I'm not sure about that, because I have friends who are involved in school food in a couple different districts in the Rochester area, and I think for class parties and stuff, it depends. There's some differing rules on that. But the one thing I wanted to mention is for the schools that do have that requirement, people get very concerned because, yes, I understand the logic from an allergy perspective, and somewhat from a sanitation perspective, although less so there. So people get concerned because you think you go to Wegmans, what do you have a choice? You go to Wegmans, you have to buy the cupcakes with the frosting mile high, and it's all full of junk. And in fact, if you start to ask around and do a little research, you will find that, for instance, Wegmans will now make mini cupcakes. There's a start, mini instead of huge. Will make mini cupcakes, and they will hand frost them instead of, which means there's less frosting. They will do frostings without dyes. There are now some bakeries in town that will do frostings without dyes or with natural dyes. So if you start looking around and asking around, you can find alternatives that are considered acceptable from a packaged foods perspective. Increasingly there are options out there too with the natural food stores and again at Wegmans for sort of some of the organic brands that are, again, it's still sweets. It's still, it's not health food, but it has less fewer troubling ingredients. So the options are out there.
All right, I'm way late for a break. Let's take a 60-second break and continue with this discussion as we talk about getting ready for Halloween and alternatives in many fashions with Chris LeBeau, the author of the Spoon-Fed blog about kids and healthy eating, Heather Fiore, a registered dietitian at URMC, Deb Ross is the creator of KidsOutAndBout.com, and George Walker of Holiday Hollow in Pembroke is here. Some of your comments as well coming up, and a very interesting one we'll lead off with right after this break. Stay with us. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we'll talk to Peter King, the CBS Radio News correspondent and upstate radio veteran and the co-author of Ithaca Radio. Our colleague Scott Feibusch joins us for the discussion. Then we'll talk about Forsaking the Highway, how to celebrate Western New York and travel far from the regularly traveled paths. That's Tuesday on Connections with Evan Dawson.
On the next Fresh Air, amazing stories from the digital revolution. From a huge 19th century calculating machine with dowels and levers to California hippies who helped bring us the personal computer. Walter Isaacson talks about his new book, The Innovators, how a group of hackers, geniuses, and geeks created the digital revolution. Join us.
Tonight at 7.
Welcome back to Connections. I had aimed to stay out of the politics side of this, but Mark sends us a comment that he thinks that this is all just, quote, Michelle Obama-style government control of food. I know Chris LeBeau wanted to go ahead and take a comment about that. What do you think?
First of all, I don't think anybody in this room is from the government, so I'm not really sure where that one's coming from. But people tend to go there, okay? They say they go government, they go nanny state. They say, you're trying to control what I eat, trying to control what I feed my children. And, I think people need to take a step back and chill out, first of all, and realize that, not everything the government does is bad, okay? The government is there to actually protect us. Could it do a better job? Absolutely. But, just because government is involved doesn't make it bad. Let's look at something like school food. School food is provided, funded by the government, okay? Funded by the government. And there have been lots of cases where schools have tried to improve the offerings in the cafeteria. And there has been such an uproar by people saying, the nanny state's trying to control what my kids eat, trying to control what I feed my kids.
Sarah Palin has showed up at schools with homemade cookies.
Yeah,
the cupcakes.
And it's like, who do you think is providing all that food in the first place? It's all provided by the government anyway, and they're just trying to make it healthier. What is wrong with trying to make us a healthier society? There is nothing wrong with that.
And I think it's people who think that it's somehow limiting freedom of choices, but Those people also probably neglect the fact that all of our tax dollars are going to pay for health bills if people don't get healthier, and we are getting heavier as
well,
a society.
Freedom of choice, you know, that one comes up a lot when I talk to parents about, you know, raising food literate children and the kinds of things that I write about. Is, you know, they want to give their kids choice. And, you know, what I respond with is to say that, you know, raising food literate children is not about giving kids endless choices and letting them eat whatever is out there. Just because a company makes something, just because a supermarket sells it, just because a restaurant offers it, doesn't mean we have to eat it. You know, so we need to teach kids to make good choices from among good choices, mm-hmm. not from anything.
All right, let me grab another call. This is Christina in Penfield. Go ahead, Christina. Did I hit the wrong one there, Dave? No, I think I hit the wrong button there. What did I do to Christina? Did I dump that call? Look what. All right, Christina, I think I lost the call. We'll come back in just a second. And online, someone's asking what registered dietitians give out for Halloween. Well, Heather.
Okay. Well, we also give out Play-Doh.
Yeah?
Sure. And sometimes we give out pretzels, and they have, like, little Halloween, you know, pretzel shapes. We've done fruit snacks. There used to be little granola bars, like little mini ones. I haven't seen those in a few years. You know, sometimes they give out candy. And often what'll happen is we underestimate how much we need because we get, like, just sometimes over 100 or close to 200 people that come through our neighborhood. And so sometimes when the kids come back from trick-or-treating, we're giving out the candy that they brought home. Just to get out of the house.
I feel like the $9 billion we're going to spend comes from all of us overbuying, and all
right.
of a sudden you've got bags lying
right.
around. And
yeah, that's
okay. You know, anyway. So let's get back to the phones, and I apologize on the for dumping Christina's call. We're going to get to her in a second. This is Allison in Canandaigua. Allison, you've called Connections. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sorry I'm not Christina.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that tomorrow will be about the 10th year that we've organized a farmer's market at the school where all of the in Canandaigua, where all the elementary school classes, all the primary school classes come out. We have music in the circle in front of the school, and they all buy local vegetables and fruits, and they go in, and some of the classes actually have crock pots and make soup with them or salads or things
Terrific.
Like that. So
that's great.
Hats off to Canandaigua.
Absolutely.
A lot of people saying yes
awesome.
To that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of presenting all of that variety to kids mm-hmm. is really, in a way, that's what parenting is about, right? It's mm-hmm. presenting to kids the variety of experiences that you can have mm-hmm. That are joyous, frankly. Mm-hmm. And so when we celebrate a season, I think a hyper-focus on food is inappropriate. It's a focus on all the kinds of things that make us human, the connections that we make between our family, our friends. You know, costumes are a great way. I remember Evan saying that his wife didn't like costumes, but costumes give kids a chance to role play, mm-hmm. to be something else, to use their imaginations. You don't have to have a costume to do that, but it's so Halloween being the season of all of these kinds of things. This is when we do this. And that kind of solidifies you as a family and as a culture.
Imagine and creativity, right, George?
Absolutely. And that I agree completely with what Derva said in terms of what kids need to do is try things on. And I think parents over worry sometimes that I'm a pirate now. Arg, you know, I'm going to hurt you. They're just trying that on to see what that feels like, and we shouldn't panic about that. But I wanted to go back also to a previous point about, again, as the geezer voice on the panel here, you know, in my... My growing up years, you knew what was in the food because you've prepared it,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. and so then we saw the advent of all the packaged foods and things coming. There's a TV show called The Middle, which is supposed to be about a typical middle class family in middle America, and the mom comes home with two bags of fast foods frequently in the show and says, "I cooked dinner, so sit down." You know, she didn't. You know, and I think that's a lost family art as well that we ought to rekindle because it's great emotionally for a family, but especially if you can add to that, not just that you're sitting as a family, but that you help to prepare that meal. You know what's in it, and you talk about it. I think that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm.
This is Christina. Thanks for calling, Christina. Go ahead.
Hi there. I thought I'd try again.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I think it's a very thoughtful conversation you're having today. I think it's great. as a person with a few years on me, like someone on the panel admits, a lot of the source of the problems about, you know, all the packaged candy and the limitation on Halloween, unfortunately, came sometime in the 60s when I was still trick-or-treating, and there were incidents around the country where sick people put, you know, needles in apples and
I don't know that that ever happened.
So that to try to protect all of us, you know, if the town organized the Halloween party or the trick-or-treating, they would say only wrapped candy.
Right, right.
And this basically happened, I think, pretty much across the country. Before that, one of my fondest memories from trick-or-treating is one house, the guy had big bottles of apple cider and little cups. And when you always look forward to going there because, going around trick-or-treating is thirsty work. But you can't, you know. And we had our little cup and we were all done and we threw it away in his trash. But unfortunately you can't do that anymore because a few people had some twisted ideas.
So, well,
and then of course the sugar industrial complex jumped right on that, and they have to use a million wrappers for piece of candy that's a quarter of an ounce.
Yeah, Christine, let me jump in because we only have about a minute left in the show, so thank you so much for the call. Certainly, as she calls it, the sugar industrial complex took advantage of fear, but it was not based on actual incidents. I mean, everything I've read, and I've tried to read a lot on this, indicates that a lot of those rumors, well, all of them were rumors, and that there weren't people putting needles and razor blades and apples and things like that. And if they are, if that ever happens, that'll be a humongous news story.
Right.
But most of your neighbors probably are not interested in that. They're probably interested in being friendly neighbors. And so we have to close. Let me just go around the table again. George Walker, where do they find you in Holiday Hollow?
Right off exit 48A, through exit 48A. It's just 2 miles away from that exit. And holidayhollow.com will tell you everything you need to know, and it's a lot of family fun.
Thank you so much. I know kidsoutandabout.com is a piece of cake. Deb, thank you.
Of course, no problem. We make sure that we send folks to Holiday Hollow every weekend day in October. I think you forgot to say that. So
that's right.
It'll end on the 26th and Columbus Day.
Very good. Heather Fiore, I hope we don't – actually, you're the person on the panel I hope we don't need as often, but we all need good registered dietitians and people with smart ideas. Thank you for taking the time to join the panel.
Thanks for having me.
And Chris LeBeau, where do we find you?
Spoonfedblog.net.
Spoonfedblog.net. And you can find multiple posts about her thoughts about Halloween. Thank you for joining the panel as well.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for tolerating the cantankerous host this hour. Let's all have a wonderful month and a great Halloween, however you choose to celebrate it. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks to Dave Campo, our engineer. You've been listening to Connections on member-supported public radio.